Chapter 2. The wound to his palm would not leave a scar. It would heal in time, and within a few months there would be no physical sign that his hand had ever been cut. Strangely to Zahariel, it was as if the wound was always there. It did not in any way pain or disable him. Afterwards, when he grasped the butt of his pistol, his grip would be as strong as it had ever been. Despite this, Zahariel felt the presence of the wound, even after it had healed. He had heard that sometimes men experienced a phantom itch when they had lost a limb, a curious malfunction of the nervous system that the apothecaries were at a loss to explain. It was like that for Zahariel. He felt a vague and insubstantial sensation in his hand at times, as though some part of his mind was reminding him of his oaths. It was always with him, like a line in his palm, invisible to the eye, but present all the same, as though it was etched into his very soul. If he had wanted to give it a name, he supposed he would have called it conscience. Whatever the cause, the sensation of the phantom wound in his palm would stay with him for the rest of his life. In time, he would almost become used to it. Zahariel and Nemiel had grown up together. Barely a few weeks separated them in age, and they were related by blood. Though distant cousins, born to different branches of the same extended family of the nobility, their features were so alike they could be mistaken for brothers. They shared the characteristically lean faces and aquiline profile of their ancestors, but the bond they shared went far deeper than any accidental similarity of their features. According to the monastic traditions of the order, all the knights of the fellowship were counted as brothers to each other. For Zahariel and Nemiel, though, the fact of their brotherhood went beyond any such simple platitudes. They had each thought of the other as a brother long before they joined the order as supplicants. In the years since, the bond between them had been tested countless times and proven true. They had come to rely on each other in a thousand small ways, even as their friendly rivalry spurred them on to greater heights. It was natural that there was an element of competitiveness, of sibling rivalry, in the relationship between them. From the earliest days of their childhood, they had tried to outdo the other in every way possible. In any contest, they had each striven to be the victor. They each wanted to be the fastest runner, the strongest swimmer, the most accurate shot, the best rider, the most skilled swordsman. The exact nature of the test did not matter, so long as one of them could beat the other. Their masters in the order had recognized the competition between them early on and had actively encouraged it. Separately, they might have been counted as average candidates for knighthood. Together, driven on by their mutual rivalry, they had become more impressive prospects. Their masters said it quietly, for it was not the way on Caliban to give unnecessary praise, but Zahariel and Nemiel were both expected to do well and to rise far in the order. As the elder of the two, even if it was only by a matter of weeks, their competition was perhaps harder on Nemiel than it was on Zahariel. Sometimes their rivalry felt like a race he could not win. Every time Nemiel thought he had finally beaten his rival, Zahariel would quickly prove him wrong by equaling and exceeding his achievements. At some level, Zahariel recognized the important role his brother played in his triumphs. Without Nemiel to measure himself against, to strive to overcome, he might never have been granted entrance into the order. He might never have become a knight. Accordingly, he could never begrudge his brother's triumphs. If anything, he celebrated them as loudly as he did his own. For Nemiel, however, it was different. In time, despairing of ever outdistancing his brother, he began to harbour secret reservations about Zahariel's achievements. Despite his best efforts to control his thoughts, Nemiel found there was a small voice within him that wished Zahariel would not be too successful. Not that he ever wished harm or failure on his brother, but simply that Zahariel's triumphs would always be more limited in magnitude than his own. Perhaps it was childish, but the competition between them had defined their lives for so long that Nemiel found it difficult to outgrow it. In many ways, his relationship with Zahariel would always be as much about rivalry as it was about brotherhood. It was the nature of their lives. In times to come, it would decide their fate.
"If that's the best you've got,"
taunted Nemiel, dancing away from Zahariel's sword thrust,
"you'd best give up now."
Zahariel stepped in close, bringing his training blade close to his body and slamming his shoulder against his cousin's chest. Nemiel was braced for the attack, but Zahariel's strength was greater, and the two boys tumbled to the stone floor of the training hall. Nemiel cried out at the impact, rolling and bringing his sword up, as Zahariel stabbed the ground where he'd been lying.
Not even close to the best I've got, said Zahariel,
panting with exertion.
I'm just toying with you.
The bout had been underway for nearly 15 minutes. 15 solid minutes of sparring back and forth, lunge and feint, dodge and block, parry and riposte. Sweat drenched both boys. Their muscles burned, and their limbs felt leaden. A circle of their fellow supplicants surrounded them, each cheering on their favourite, and Master Ramiel watched over the fight with a mixture of paternal pride and exasperation.
"Finish it, one of you, for the love of Caliban!" said Ramiel. "You have other lessons to attend today. Finish it, or I will call it a draw."
His last comment gave Zahariel fresh strength and purpose, though he saw it had the same effect on his cousin, no doubt as Master Ramiel had intended. Neither boy would settle for a draw. Only victory would be enough to satisfy either of them. He saw Nemiel's muscles bunch in preparation for an attack, and lunged forward. His sword stabbed out towards Nemiel's stomach. The blade was dulled and the tip flat, but the weapon was still a solid lump of heavy metal in Zahariel's hands that was capable of wreaking great harm upon an opponent. Nemiel's weapon swept down and pushed the blow to the side, but Zahariel's attack had never been about his sword. With Nemiel's blade pushed to the side, he carried on his lunge and hammered his fist against the side of his cousin's head. The blow was poorly delivered, but it had the effect Zahariel was looking for. Nemiel cried out and dropped his sword as his hands flew to his face. It was all the opening Zahariel needed. He finished the bout by driving his knee up into Nemiel's stomach, doubling him up and sending him crashing to the floor in a winded, head-ringing heap. Zahariel stepped away from his cousin and looked towards Master Ramiel, who nodded and said,
"Winner, Zahariel."
He let out a great shuddering breath and dropped his sword to the floor. It landed with a ringing clang, and he looked over to where Nemiel was picking himself up from his pain. Ramiel turned from the bout and marched resolutely towards the arched exit, leading his students towards their next gruelling lesson. Zahariel held out his hand to Nemiel and said,
"Are you all right?"
His cousin still had his hands clutched to the side of his head, his lips pursed together as he tried to hide how much it hurt. For a brief second, Zahariel was sorry for the pain he had caused to Nemiel, but he forced the feeling down. It had been his duty to win the bout, for giving anything less than his best would have been contrary to the teachings of the Order. It had been 2 years since his induction into the Order, and the 9th anniversary of his birth had passed less than a month ago. Not that there had been any special reason for marking the day, but the instructor knights of the Order were very particular about marking the passage of time and keeping the census of ages and merits of its members. Nemiel had turned 9 a few days before him, and though they were alike in features and age, their temperaments could not have been more different. Zahariel could see that Nemiel had already forgotten the outcome of the bout, having learned how he had been defeated.
"I'm fine, cousin," said Nemiel. "That wasn't bad. I see what you did, but you won't get me that way again."
That was true, thought Zahariel. Every time he fought his cousin and employed a method he had used previously, he was roundly beaten. You could beat Nemiel, but you could not beat him the same way twice.
"Try not to be too disappointed," said Zahariel. "I may have won, but it wasn't a pretty victory."
"Who cares about its prettiness?" snapped Nemiel. "You won, didn't you?"
Zahariel's hand was still extended towards his cousin, who finally accepted it and hauled himself to his feet. He dusted his robes down and said,
"Ah, don't mind me. I'm just sore about getting beaten again in front of Ramiel as well. I suppose I should think of all the times I've put you on your back, eh?"
"You're right," said Zahariel. "I think there's something in human nature that makes us concentrate too much on our disappointments at times.
We should remember how lucky we are." "Lucky? What are you talking about?"
said Nemiel as they followed the other students from the training halls.
"You just beat me in the head, and we live on a world infested by killer monsters. How is that lucky?"
Zahariel looked at Nemiel, afraid he was being mocked.
"Think about it. Of all the eras of Caliban's history, we have been fortunate enough to be born in the same period as men like the Lion and Luther. We are to take part in the campaign against the great beasts."
"Oh, well, I can see how that would be considered lucky, getting to march into the forests and face a horde of monsters that could swallow us whole or tear us apart with one sweep of their claws."
Now Zahariel knew he was being teased, for Nemiel could always be relied upon to boast of how fearsome a creature he would slay when he was finally allowed to declare a quest, venture into the forest, and prove his mettle against one of the great beasts. Instead of backing down in the face of Nemiel's teasing, he continued, "We're here, supplicants of the Order, and one day we will be knights." Zahariel gestured at their surroundings, the high stone walls, the racks of weapons, the spiral on the floor, and the giant mosaic on the wall depicting the Order's symbol, the downward-pointed sword. "Look around you. We train to become knights and eradicate the threat of the beasts from our world. The moment when the last beast is slain will be written into the annals of the Order and Caliban, and will be preserved for thousands of years. History's unfolding, and if we're lucky, we will be there when it happens."
"True enough, cousin," said Nemiel. "People will say that we lived in interesting times, eh?"
"Interesting times?"
"It was something Master Ramiel said once, you remember, when we were outside in the dark, petitioning to join the Order as novices."
"I remember," said Zahariel, though in truth he remembered little of the night they had spent in the darkness beyond the safety of the gates of the Order's fortress monastery, save for the terror of the great beasts and of the night.
"He told me it was a phrase from ancient terror," continued Nemiel. "When people lived through periods of change, the kind of days when history is made, they referred to them as interesting times. They even had an expression, 'May you live in interesting times.' That's what they used to say."
"May you live in interesting times?" echoed Zahariel.
"I like it. The expression, I mean. It sounds right, somehow. I know knights aren't supposed to believe in such things, but it sounds almost like a prayer."
"A prayer, yes, but not a good one. 'May you live in interesting times' was something they said to their worst enemies. It was intended as a curse."
"A curse? I don't understand."
"I suppose they wanted a quiet life. They didn't want to have to live through times of blood and upheaval. They didn't want change. They were happy. They all wanted to live for a long time and die in their beds. I suppose they thought their lives were perfect. The last thing they wanted was for history to come along and mess it all up."
"It's hard to imagine," Zahariel said, picking up the sword he had dropped and returning it to the weapons rack.
"Imagine anyone being that contented with their lot and not wanting to change it. Maybe the difference is that we grew up on Caliban. Life is so hard here that everyone grows used to blood and upheaval."
"Maybe things were different on Terra," suggested Nemiel.
"Maybe, but maybe it's because we take it for granted that our lives on Caliban are always about struggle. In comparison, Terra must be like a paradise."
"If it even exists," said Nemiel. "There are people who say it's only a myth, made up by our ancestors. Caliban is where our culture was born, and Caliban is where it will die. There are no starships or lost brothers on other planets. It's all a lie, a well-meant one, created to give us comfort when times are bad. But a lie, nonetheless."
"Do you believe that?" asked Zahariel.
"Do you really think Terra is a lie?"
"Yes, maybe. I don't know," said Nemiel with a shrug. "We can look up at the stars in the sky, but it's hard to believe anybody lives there. Just like it's hard to believe a world could be so perfect that you'd never want it to change. You're right, cousin. Our lives are struggle. It's all we can ever expect of things. On Caliban, anyway."
Further discussions were prevented by Master Ramiel's booming voice coming from the archway at the far end of the chamber.
"Get a move on, you two," bellowed their tutor. "It's an extra turn on the sentry towers for you two tonight. Don't you know you've kept Brother Amadis waiting?"
Both boys shared an excited glance, but it was Nemiel who recovered his wits first.
"Brother Amadis has returned?"
"Aye," nodded Ramiel. "By rights I should send you to the kitchens for your tardiness, but it will reflect badly on your fellows if you do not hear him speak."
Zahariel sprinted alongside Nemiel as he ran for the archway, excitement flooding his young body with fresh vigour and anticipation. Brother Amadis, the hero of Maponis. His hero. The Circle Chamber of Aldaruk was well named, thought Zahariel, as he and Nemiel skidded through its arched entrance. Flickering torches hung, sending a fragrant aroma of scented smoke into the enormous chamber. The hall was already packed, hundreds of novices, knights and supplicants filling the many stone benches that rose in tiers from the raised marble plinth at the centre. Mighty pillars rose at the chamber's cardinal points, curving inwards in great Gothic arches to form the roof of the dome, a green and gold ceiling from which hung a wide circular candle holder filled with winking points of light. The walls of the chamber were composed almost entirely of tall lengths of stained glass, each one telling of the heroic actions of one of the Order's knights. Many of these glorious panels depicted the actions of the Lion and Luther, but many more predated them joining the Order, and several of these depicted the warrior known as the Hero of Maponis, Brother Amardis. One of the most senior knights of the Order who still participated in the Lion's great quest to rid the forests of Caliban, Brother Amardis was known throughout the world as a dashing and heroic warrior who embodied everything it meant to be a knight. Not just a knight of the Order, but a knight of Caliban. His deeds were epic tales of heroism and nobility, adventures every child on Caliban grew up hearing from the mouths of their fathers. Amardis had personally slain the great beast of Kulkos and had led the knights in battle against the predations of the blood knights of the Endriago vaults. Before the coming of Johnson, it had been assumed by many that Brother Amardis would eventually rise to become the Grand Master of the Order. Such had not been the case, however. Though all believed that the position would be Johnson's upon the successful conclusion of the beast hunt, Amardis had borne the Lion no ill will, and had simply returned to the great forests to slay monsters and bear the honour of the Order to places near and far. The number of youngsters presenting themselves before the mighty gates of Aldaruk had as much to do with his renown as it did the presence of the Lion. Zahariel remembered hearing the tales of him vanquishing the Blood Knights at the hearth fire on many a stormy evening. His father would always choose the darkest, most haunted nights to tell the tale, weaving a grisly tapestry of the horrors and debauched blood feasts of the knights to terrify his sons, before bringing the story to its heroic conclusion when Amardis defeated their leader in single combat.
"It looks like everyone who's anyone's here," said Nemiel, as they jostled for position among the stragglers in the topmost tier of the circle chamber.
They elbowed past newly accepted novices and supplicants who had not served as long as they had. Grumbles followed them, but none dared gainsay a boy who had been part of the Order for longer. An unspoken but wholly understood hierarchy operated within the Order, and its structure could not ever be broken. At last they found their proper place, further forward than the inferior supplicants, and behind or beside those of a similar rank and stature. Though the centre of the circle chamber was some distance away, the view afforded from the upper tiers was second to none in terms of its panorama. The centre was empty, with a single throne-like chair set in the middle of the floor.
"It looks like we've made it in time," Zahariel noted, and Nemiel nodded.
Banners hung from the chamber's roof, and Zahariel felt a familiar wonder envelop him as he stared at them, reading the history of the Order in their pictorial representations of honour, valour, and battle. Gold stitching crossed ceremonial standards of green and blue, and red-edged war banners outnumbered the ceremonial ones by quite some margin. The entire roof was hung with banners, so many that it seemed as though a great blanket had been spread across it and then slashed into hanging squares. A hush fell upon the assembled novices, supplicants, and knights at some unspoken signal, and Zahariel heard the creak of a wooden door opening, the metallic walk of a man in armour, and the harsh, rapping footsteps of metal on marble. He strained for a better look, finally seeing the man who had made him want to become a knight. One man marched to the centre of the chamber in the burnished plate armour of the Order. Zahariel tried not to feel disappointed at the warrior before him, but where he had expected a towering hero of legend, the equal of the Lion, he now saw that Brother Amardis was simply a man. He knew he should have expected no more, but to see the warrior who had lived in his heroic dreams for as long as he could remember as just a man of flesh and blood, who did not tower over them like some mighty leviathan of legend, was somehow less than he had hoped for. Yet even as he tried to come to terms with the reality of seeing that his hero was, after all, just a man, he saw there was something indefinable to him. There was something in the way Amardis walked to the centre of the chamber, as though he owned it, the confidence he wore like a cloak, as though he understood that this gathering was just for him, and that it was his right and due. Despite what might have been perceived as monstrous arrogance, Zahariel could see a wry cast to Amadis's features, as though he expected such a gathering, but found it faintly absurd that he should be held in such high regard. The more Zahariel looked at the figure in the centre of the chamber, the more he saw the easy confidence, the surety of purpose, and the quiet courage in his every movement. Amadis held tight to the hilt of his sword as he walked, every inch a warrior, and Zahariel began to feel his admiration for this heroic knight grow with every passing second. Surrounded by knights of such stature and courage that it was an honour simply to be in the same room as them, Zahariel had assumed that such warriors knew no fear. But looking at the weathered, handsome face of Brother Amadis, he realised that such an idea was preposterous. As a boy in the forests of Caliban, he had certainly felt fear often enough, but he had assumed that once he became a knight, the emotion would be utterly unknown to him. Brother Amadis had faced terrible foes and triumphed despite fear. To know fear, real fear, and to gain a great victory in spite of it seemed a more noble achievement than any triumph where fear was absent. Brother Amadis looked around and nodded in quiet satisfaction at the quality of the men and boys around him.
"If you're expecting a long and inspiring speech, then I'm afraid I've none to give you."
Amadis's voice easily projected to the far reaches of the circle chamber, and Zahariel felt a thrill of excitement course through him at every word. Only the lion and Luther had voices of such power and resonance.
"I'm a simple man," continued Amadis, "a warrior and a knight. I don't give speeches, and I'm not one for grand shows. But the lion asked me to talk to you here today, though I'm no public speaker, that's for sure. I have returned to Alderuk, and I will be working alongside the instructor knights for a spell, so I expect I'll be seeing you all over the next few weeks and months before I return to the forests."
Zahariel felt his pulse quicken at the idea of learning from a warrior such as Amadis, and felt wild, uncontrollable elation flood him.
"As I said before, I'm not usually one for theatrics, but I do understand their value to you and to me," said Amadis. "Seeing me here will drive you on to become the best knights you can be, because I give you something to aspire to, a reason to want to better yourselves. Looking out at your faces reminds me of where I came from, what I used to be. Many tales are told of me, and some of them are even true."
Polite laughter rippled around the chamber as Amadis continued,
"As it happens, most of them are true. But that's not the point. The point is that when a man hears the same thing said of him often enough, he begins to believe them. Tell a child often enough that it is worthless and beneath contempt, and it will start to believe that such a vile sentiment is true. Tell a man he is a hero, a giant amongst men, and he will start to believe that too, thinking himself above all others. If enough praise and honour is heaped upon a man, he will start to believe that such is his due, and that all others must bow to his will. Seeing you all here is a grand reminder that I am not such a man. I was once a would-be novice, standing out in the cold night before the gates of this monastery. I too walked the spiral under the rods of instructor knights, and I too undertook a beast quest to prove my mettle to the order. You are where I was, and I am where any one of you can be."
Amadis's speech seemed to reach out to Zahariel, and he knew that he would remember this moment for as long as he lived. He would remember these words, and he would live by them. The words of this heroic knight had power beyond the simple hearing of them. They seemed to be aimed directly at every warrior gathered in the chamber. Looking around, Zahariel knew that every knight, novice, and supplicant felt that every word was for him and for him alone. Thunderous applause and spontaneous cheering erupted in the circle chamber, the knights and supplicants rising to their feet. Such displays were almost unheard of within the walls of Alderuk, and Zahariel was swept up in the infectious enthusiasm of his brethren. He looked over at Nemiel, his cousin similarly caught up in the wave of pride. Such was the power, strength, and conviction in his words and delivery that Zahariel vowed there and then that he would be the greatest knight the Order had ever seen, the most heroic warrior ever to sally forth from the great memorial gate to do battle with the enemies of Caliban. Despite the pride and hubris inherent in such vows, he made a silent oath that he would never lose sight of what it meant to be a knight, the humility that must accompany all great deeds, and the unspoken satisfaction in knowing that doing the right thing was reason enough to do it. Eventually, the applause died down as Amadis lifted his arms and waved away the clapping and cheering.
"Enough, brothers, enough!" he shouted with a smile on his face. "This isn't what I came here for. Despite my earlier words, I do seem to have given a bit of a speech. But hopefully, it wasn't too boring, eh?"